Welcome to the Hoops Hype Podcast. My name is Alex Kennedy. This is episode number 211. We post new episodes every Monday and Thursday. Joining me today is an NBA agent who works for BDA Sports Management. He represents several NBA players, including Josh Richardson and Grant Williams. My guest is Eric Cabe. Eric, thanks for joining me. How are you?
Hey, Alex. How's it going? Good to be here.
We really appreciate it. We know things are crazy right now, so thanks so much for doing this. Let's talk about your career as an NBA agent. When did you first realize that you wanted to be an NBA agent?
Yeah, so it's actually kind of a roundabout way how I kind of got into this business. I graduated from undergrad in 2008, and that was the first once-in-a-lifetime economic collapse that we were in, and it was actually kind of hard to find jobs. And an opportunity came up to be an intern at BDA Sports. I knew I loved basketball. I knew I loved the sport. I wanted to be around it, but I didn't really know a lot about sports management. I didn't really know what that meant. So I kind of took the job as an intern, started out faxing stuff, sending mail out, emails, just a bunch of grunt work, getting coffee for guys. And that's kind of how I started. I did that for 2 years, kind of just learning the business from the ground up. And then I moved to Chicago to go to law school at Loyola University of Chicago. And I was fortunate enough that BDA Sports had an agent out here, Kevin Bradbury, who I continued to work with during law school. And he kind of taught me more of the agent side of the business, recruiting, managing clients, dealing with like day-to-day stuff with, family and all that. And then I graduated from law school. And I certified to be an agent. So I've been a certified agent now for 3 years. I'm lucky enough to work with three NBA players. I work with Josh Richardson on the 76ers, Grant Williams on the Celtics, and then Daquan Jeffries. He's a two-way with the Kings. So that's kind of a long story short. That's kind of how I got into the business.
That's incredible. We always have people that, whenever we have episodes with agents or executives, we always have people that are aspiring agents or executives that listen and want to know the keys to kind of pursuing that career. So, I mean, the internship, that's incredible that you were able to turn a BDA internship into becoming a certified agent for them. How valuable was that internship? And would you recommend other people who are maybe pursuing the same career go after an internship like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, everyone wants, we like to say we chase a ball around for a living, right? Everyone wants to do this job. I'm an NBA agent. Like, that's so cool, right? Like, I get to interact with these, high profile athletes. We get access to all this basketball stuff. Like, I live basketball every day for a living. Like, super blessed to be in this business. And I think because of that, a lot of people want to do it. It's extremely competitive. If you can get your foot into the door somehow, some way, you got to do it, right? Like, I realized a week or two into my internship, I was like, wow, like, I'm really lucky to be here. Cause BDA, Bill Duffy, like, this is a big agency that represents a lot of big NBA players. And yeah, I remember we used to receive resumes in the mail and it'd be like business school, Harvard Business School, Yale Law School, like, all these places. I'm like, man, I have this internship somehow. And we're getting like all these resumes from like all these top tier schools and these two really talented people. So I would say any way possible, if you can get yourself through the door somehow, you got to do it, right? Cause unless you're friends with a lottery pick or you grew up with, one of the best basketball players in his class, it's a really hard industry to get into. So any way you can get into it is the way to go. And I think I was lucky enough to where, Bill, president of BDA, he really empowered me to go out and do this. He said, look, Eric, you're here, you're doing grunt work, but like, if you really want to go after these players and you want to sign guys, you can use my name, you can use the BDA name, and we'll give you support to sign these guys and to service them. So he really empowered me from the beginning to kind of get out there and start signing guys.
Yeah, that was my next question. You know, whenever you're talking to newer agents, one thing that I've always heard is finding that first client is the hardest because once you have a client or two, then you can go to other players and say, "Hey, I represent so and so," and you know, that kind of gives you an in because then you're talking to their college teammates and different people they know, and you know, getting that first client is sometimes the hardest one. What was that process for you? I mean, obviously, like you said, you had BDA supporting you and that had to help, but when you don't have a relationship with a lottery pick and you don't grow up with a guy like you said, what was that process of finding your first clients?
Yeah, it's every how you get connected to every guy is different. It's actually funny. I used to think getting your first client was the hardest, and then I signed my first client, and then it was 3 years of straight no's until I signed my second MBA client.
Wow.
Yeah, so I mean, and that's just kind of the nature of the business, right? There's so many. I mean, there's more registered agents with the PA than there are players playing in the NBA. That's just how competitive, right? And even though I'm at a big firm like BDA, there's a lot of other big firms out there too, right? Some of them have unlimited budgets, and it's hard to compete with that kind of stuff, right? So, with the first client, it was just a connection through the college coach. We had a long-standing relationship with one of the coaches there, and he put me in contact with Josh Richardson's dad, Mike. And I kind of, he called me one day and I kind of just got to know him over the course of an entire season, right? Like, I just offered advice. I wasn't really selling him all the, I was just trying to get to know him, let him get to know me. I was trying to be, give him information that could help them make the best decision when Josh became a professional. And that's, and then I was lucky enough to where, Josh went to Tennessee. He has really strong roots at Tennessee. He put me in contact with Grant Williams, who is, one of the best Tennessee players in the past decade to come out of that school. So kind of worked that connection. And now I have, two really good Tennessee players that I'm lucky enough to work for. And that's kind of how, you just slowly build up your client base. You're definitely going to get a lot of no's in this business. So no agent signs every single guy they recruit. It's just too competitive of a business for that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard stories where, you know, there have been agents who recognized or a guy's talent really early and have tried really hard and, you know, spent years working on a prospect. And then after all that, you get a no. I guess how tough is that whenever you've put in that much work with a guy? And sometimes, you know, you think you're going to be their agent. They're telling you that they're going to hire you. And then at the last second, someone swoops in and hires them away or takes them away. You know, how tough is that?
Yeah, it's happened to me a couple times, and the unique part about this business is, unless you're signing a veteran, the only time you can sign new clients or acquire new clients is in like March or April when the college season's over or the European season's over, right? Because you can't sign NCAA players, they're amateurs.
Right.
So, it's unique in the fact that we can only sign guys one time a year, right? We call it closing time. It's like an 8 week period where everyone signs with an agent. So a lot of times the entire year, 2 years, 3 years is building up to that 8 week period where you kind of sit down and do the final meetings. It sucks. No's always suck. And I think they suck particularly in this business because you put so much effort into a guy. You're in contact with the parents, the kid once a week, twice a week, three times a week for almost a year. And then you get a no, and it's, that's just kind of, we have a saying here, you sign the guys you're supposed to sign. And like, I truly believe that. Like, you sign the guys that believe in you, the guys that you believe in, you're compatible, your personalities get along with each other. So, every no is a good lesson. I think it's important to fail in business because you learn the most from a no than you do a yes.
Yeah, it's a great way to look at it. One thing too that I've talked to agents about, you know, you can be fired in an instant. The player just has to basically fill out the paperwork and let you know, hey, I'm moving on. There's tons of poaching in the agent world. I know that's a big reason why a lot of agents don't get along with each other because there are some agents out there that will poach your clients and hang out around workout facilities and things like that. And they're constantly looking to sign a veteran away from you. So even if you do land a guy and get that yes, you could lose them in the future. And it doesn't take it's not very hard for a player to move on. I don't think maybe fans realize that. Yeah, you would still get paid for the contract that you negotiated or the endorsements that you had negotiated, but it's very easy for a guy to move on. And there are some players that have had three, four agents. It's kind of crazy. You know, how scary is that? I mean, I'm sure you don't think about it and focus on that too much, but knowing that a guy can move on at any point, even if you get that commitment.
Yeah, no, I mean, like you said, there's some job security in the fact that if you know negotiate a deal, you'll get paid out on the entirety of the deal. But yeah, I think it's kind of always in the back of everyone's mind. But you can't really let that be your driving force in how you work with a guy, because then you just become a yes man, right? And that doesn't help him. That doesn't help you. Doesn't help progress his career. Doesn't help him get better. Doesn't give him information that's true. Like, a lot of these guys are surrounded by yes men anyways. Like, his agent shouldn't be one of them. Kind of the philosophy that I've always had and kind of Bill's always taught us is you just do the best you can. You put the best product in front of the guys. You work hard for them every day. And then everything else comes after that. The money comes after that. The loyalty comes after that. You just got to do, you just, you know, every day you interact with these guys, you just got to be on top of it. I'd say the most important thing is if you say you're going to do something, do it. You know, it sounds simple, but a lot of guy, you know, a lot of agents be like, yeah, I can do this, I can do that, I can do this, and they don't do any of that stuff. So I think that's a big, you know, doesn't really drive the way I interact with guys. I just try to, you know, build a genuine relationship with a guy and do a good job with him, and you know, hopefully everything works out after that.
Right. And yeah, doing what you say you're going to do is big, especially, you know, when you talk about some of those poachers, they'll usually either get in the player's head or talk to someone close to the player and oversell, overpromise, and make it sound like, oh, I could easily get you more money than that, or I can get you these endorsements. But then it's just to secure the guy. And then once they actually get them, it's really hard because they're overselling and overpromising. So yeah, that's a great point. What are your favorite and least favorite parts of your job and this industry as a whole?
I'd say, I mean, by far my you know, the best part about this job, well, one is I work with amazing people here, from Bill, the other agents, our support staff, our clients relation team, our PR people. Like, we have a lot of really talented people here that is just, it's good. I don't get to see them a lot because we all work remotely, but like twice a year we all get together. Like, it feels good to work with talented, driven people. You know, you're just surrounding yourself with people like that helps you drive yourself. But you know, honestly, it's the clients. Like, I really enjoy my, like, if one of these guys calls me, I really enjoy picking up the phone and talking to them. Like, I'm not, it's not lip service. I genuinely enjoy hanging out with these guys. They're fun to be around. It's, you know, Josh was a really cool story because he wasn't invited to the combine, which, looking back now, it's crazy. I just saw like a redraft of his class and he was like number eight on the list. He wasn't invited to the combine. I remember I had to make that call to him. I'm like, hey man, like, you know, we pushed, but you didn't get invited to this combine. Like, don't worry, you're still gonna get workouts. We have our pro day, this and that. And like, I just like heard the disappointment in his voice. And like, to kind of grow with him, because I was just starting in the business as well. To kind of grow with him, his rookie year, and like how he went from like not playing at all to being a key guy off the bench for Miami to starting the next year. Like, it's really cool to kind of see a guy evolve like that, and grow in the league and kind of grow with him. And there's, you know, there's, it's a lot of satisfaction professionally to kind of be a part of that. You know, Grant Williams is the same thing. Like, a lot of people is like, this guy's not an NBA player. This guy's like, he's a college stud, but like, does his game translate? And like, every time Grant's on the, you know, on the court, he's one of the smartest guys out there. He's making good plays all the time. And like, I recognize that, coaches recognize that, and it feels good to be part of something great like that, you know? That's probably my favorite part of the job. My least favorite part of the job, that's probably what you said, was the poaching, you know? The competitive nature of this job, there's a lot of good agents, I'll say that. There's a lot of good agencies doing good work for their guys, and they care about their guys, and they do good stuff. But there's a lot of bad agents in this business. There's a lot of, you know, bad agencies. There's a lot of bad actors that throw money around all the time to sign guys. It's either under the table or marketing advances. You know, there's creative ways guys pay players. And that part, that side of the business kind of sucks. 'Cause that's, I didn't get into this business to pay people to work with me, right? I'm trying to enrich these people's lives so they can enrich mine back. And it's something mutual. So that's probably, the worst part about this business is kind of that dark, shady underworld, where you have bad actors trying to sign guys.
For sure. Yeah, you mentioned Josh's story. He was a 2-star recruit, by Scout. There were some scouting, services that didn't even list him. So it is so cool to see what he's become and how he's been able to prove everyone wrong. But when you are looking at players and there's an under the radar player that you really like, I guess how do you go about the process of identifying that talent? And then if there is a guy that you see that you feel like maybe isn't getting the recognition or attention from people in NBA circles that he deserves, how do you go about trying to represent that player?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, every player you sign, every guy you scout, they're all a little bit different, right? I think when I was watching Josh, I kind of felt the league was transitioning to, I don't like to say positionless basketball because there's still positions in basketball, but multi-positional basketball, right? Like the league was transitioning, like these guys that are 6'6" to 6'9", super athletic, they're long, they can defend, they can play multiple spots, they can guard multiple positions, they can do, they're utility players, right? Like these athletic, long guys that can do everything. And that's what kind of jumped out to me to Josh. I remember watching him his junior year in the NCAA tournament, and he just did like this ferocious, like tomahawk slam on this guy. And I was like, good grief, like who is this? Who's this guy? And I kind of just looked into him. I looked in, the biggest thing with him is he had some like funky mechanical issues with his shot. And we fixed all of that in pre-draft. And I was like, once we got that locked down, like this guy is going to be, a really good player in the NBA. So, I mean, it's different for every guy. For Grant, everyone said he's kind of a, he's an in-between position guy. What can he play? But like, if you watch Grant play, the kid's just a winner. Like he makes winning plays all the time. Like his basketball IQ is off the charts. He plays like a 10-year veteran out there. Like he just know he plays a game at a different level than, a lot of guys do. So that's kind of what stood out to me. I'm like, this, he's going to be successful even at the next level. So every guy is different. If an under the radar guy like Daquan Jeffries, this guy transferred to Tulsa. Wasn't on. I don't even know if he had a scouting report on him. But like I watched him play and this guy's 6'6". His vertical was like 42 inches. Like this kid, he's a monster. He's just strong. He's fast. He's super physical. And I was just watching him like, that's exactly what the NBA is looking for. So we actually got a lot of offers to get him drafted in the second round, which we declined because we just wanted to keep his free agency status going into, mini camps. And then, obviously the Kings picked him up off waivers and now he's on a two-way there. But selling that guy, you just find something the guy really excels at and you sell that part of it, right? Like I was like, look, this guy's an NBA physical, like he's a top 5% NBA athlete. Often helps to have numbers that back that up. So we do a lot of our pre-draft at a place called P3, Peak Performance Project. They're based in Santa Barbara, and they do all the testing for the combine. So I had Daquan do testing there because I was like, I know this guy's going to test off the charts. Like, there's no way he doesn't. So he does the testing there, and this guy's like in the 95th percentile for everything, like explosions, vertical, lateral quickness, eccentric force, decentric force, like everything you can think of. I was like, okay, now I have ammunition. I can go sell this kid to, all these teams. And there was a lot of interest in them. So you just kind of have to find, every player's different, every client's different. You just got to find the strengths that you think teams want, teams need, and then you kind of just sell them on that.
I look at a guy like Grant, and he seems like the nicest guy ever. He just has such a great personality, and he's the kind of guy that you want to be around, and I feel like everyone loves him. How much does a guy's character or personality factor into maybe your interest or how you sell them?
I mean, you would hope you sell everyone exactly the same, right? I think that's kind of our philosophy here. If you're the number one pick in the draft or you're the 40th pick in the draft, you sell them all the same to teams, right? I would say happiness of the job and like your own mental well-being definitely helps if you get along with the guys. What I said earlier, you sign the guys you're supposed to sign, like Grant, Josh, Daquan. I work with, VJ Beachum, he was on Windy City Bulls, Chandre Jones, who's on Northern Arizona G League team. Like, these are all really good kids that I'm super lucky to work with. Like, they're easy. None of them have crazy big egos. Like, these are guys that I'll hang out with even if I wasn't their age. Like, and that helps a lot. They have really great families, great support systems. If one of these guys, mom or dad calls me at 10 o'clock at night, I'm not like, oh, not again. Like, I'm happy to pick up the call. Like, I like to interact with these people. It makes my job easier and it makes my happiness of the job easier as well. Like, I think, obviously you want to sign really talented players because at the end of the day, we're in a business, right? Talented players make a lot of money. You make a lot of money. But I think it's super important to sign people that you genuinely get along with and are genuinely good people. Like, Grant is an awesome kid. Like, he's so responsible. He's so smart. He's on top of everything. He's really easy to deal with. Like, sometimes you have a tough conversation with a guy and, they don't get it or they blame you. It's your fault. Like, Grant understands, like, when we're explaining stuff and talking through things with him, he generally understands. Like, he's like, okay, I get it. Like, I understand why this isn't working out the way it's supposed to. Josh is the same way. Like, these are, these both kids are in their degrees, have really great support system from their families. Like, these guys are like genuinely really great to work with. And I was just saying that because we're on a podcast, but I wake up every day and I'm a very blessed to work with, all my guys.
We're seeing more and more agents transition to NBA front office jobs, people like Bob Myers, Rob Pelinka, Leon Rose, and so on. How does an agent's skill set and expertise translate over to an NBA front office job?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. I think one obviously is scouting talent. I think that's a big part of this job. Scouting them for yourselves, not relying on mock drafts or not relying on, scouting reports. I would never assign Josh if I looked at a mock draft or a scouting report. You kind of have to evaluate guys on your own, right? Because there's a lot of guys that are highly rated and go high in the draft and they end up, not getting a second contract. And then there's a lot of guys that not a lot of people have their eye on and they end up getting big second contracts. So I think that's a big part of it. I think another big part of it is selling guys on believing in you and your brand. But when you're a GM and a player has multiple options of where to go and all the money's the same, what's going to be the difference maker? It's going to be how that player feels coming out of the meeting with that GM and with that coach. I think, Bob Myers is obviously a great example. He was, great at scouting talent. Really, he was a really good guy. He was a really good agent. Like, nothing bad to say about him. And I think that translates on the GM as well. Yeah, it's kind of interesting that that's kind of the trend, right? Like, all these really big agents are becoming GMs. And for the most part, it's worked out for a lot of them.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, because not only the talent evaluation, but you're an expert when it comes to the CBA, contract negotiations. Now you're just on the other side of the table, which is obviously another big part of the job. You have a ton of relationships around the NBA usually if you're an agent, especially if you're a Leon Rose or a Bob Myers. A ton of different people that you're going to be interacting with day to day once you do take on that executive job. So it makes sense. Down the road, would you ever consider making that transition and working in a front office?
I mean, who wouldn't want to play fantasy basketball for a living and get paid for it? It sounds pretty good. I have made promises to guys that I would not stop being an agent until they retired. So if I were to do it, it would probably be 10 to 15 years from now. I mean, I love what I do. I think there's a certain amount of freedom to my job. I don't have to go, I don't clock in, to an office. I mean, I love working hard. GMs are, these guys are cranking out like 100-hour weeks. They're flying on, they're going to 40, 41 games a year. A lot of them are away and then 41 home games. I don't know if I'm really, it's kind of a regimented corporate kind of vibe, and I'm more of a, self-starting business guy. So not at the moment, although down the road I wouldn't, I wouldn't say no if the right opportunity came across.
Right, that makes sense. I did an article recently where I interviewed several agents about how COVID-19 and the stay-at-home orders are impacting their job. For you, how has your day-to-day changed as a result of the pandemic?
Lot less travel, which is good and it's bad. Because obviously I'm on the road all the time, either recruiting or servicing a client, home games, away games, all that stuff. Definitely at home more. I think, the first couple of weeks was adapting to it because it happened fairly abruptly. I remember when they canceled or they suspended the league, I was going to drive up to Milwaukee to see Grant play. The Celtics were playing the Bucks, and I was actually going to drive up there, and I had all these plans, and I was actually on the phone getting my credentials for the next day when they canceled or suspended everything. I was like, well, time to adapt. What's going to happen? I think the biggest part was setting these guys up at home because obviously you just don't want them just sitting around doing nothing. So a big part for us was one, getting them to a safe space. All my guys went back home, Charlotte, Miami, Oklahoma City. So all these guys went back home. And then once, we knew they were somewhere safe and their health wasn't a major factor, it was all right, now how do we keep these guys in shape and motivated and keep going so that when the season does resume, because basketball, the ball will bounce again, how do we keep these guys in shape and the best prepared? So, we set up a lot of personal gyms. I'm an expert in personal gyms if you ever need help with that. We set these guys up with safe gym spaces if it was possible, court time. And then a lot of it is, kind of figuring out how to keep these guys engaged, through social media and through marketing, and giving back to the community is the biggest part. So a lot of it was trying to find initiatives that one, the guys were interested in, and two, would make a meaningful impact, on people. Because at the end of the day, we're all very lucky to be in this business, right? And, these guys are making a lot of money, and not that they have to give back, but I feel like they like to give back, right? So for Josh, he donated 500,000 meals to the Philadelphia area. He works with an organization called TAPS, which is a great organization that works with children whose parents have died in action, in the military. He does like, he's been doing e like online interviews with kids and mentoring. Grant's the same way. Grant donated a bunch of food to a local hospital. He's partnering with mentor.org to mentor underserviced kids in the Boston area. So a lot of it's just been finding new ways to keep guys busy, to give back to the community, to engage with, brands still, just to kind of maintain momentum during this time. I think that's just, I think we're all kind of in a groove now that it's been a month or two since this all started. Basically, yeah, just keeping guys engaged, finding new creative ways to kind of market them and to give back to communities.
Yeah, I've been so impressed with how, the NBA community, these guys have stepped up and really made an impact, either donating meals, donating money, making themselves available. It's been really cool to see. I've been so impressed. I know everything is up in the air right now when it comes to finishing the season, and there's so many things that are still undecided, obviously, but just, having to predict, do you think the NBA will finish this season?
I'm not a betting man, but if I were, I'd probably say yes. I think there's motivation on the owner side and there's motivation on the player side. I think the owners want to play and the players want to play. And anytime you have owners and players agreeing on something, it'll probably happen. Doesn't happen all the time, but in this case, they do. I think the biggest hurdle is making sure it's safe for the players, making sure it's safe for the staff. I think that's paramount. And then, trying to figure out how you can, not just safe in terms of COVID, but safe in terms of these guys' bodies, right? Because you can't just throw these guys into a playoff atmosphere and expect these guys not to get hurt, right? Preseason, you have mini camps and you have preseason mini camps for 2 weeks, then you have preseason games, and then you finally start the season, right? So I think all the logistical stuff has to be figured out, but I think they're, there's motivation on both sides to have the season, to complete this current season.
One thing I'm curious to see, and you and I were talking about this a bit before we started, recording here, the pre-draft process is going to be so interesting to see. Right now during this time of year, most agents are in draft mode, working with prospects, paying for pre-draft training, arranging workouts, interviews, and all that stuff. We know that the 2020 draft will be delayed, but whenever it happens, the pre-draft process could be very unique. We saw that with the NFL a bit. They had the combine, but then pro days and workouts and interviews were all virtual. How do you think the pre-draft process will be affected?
Yeah, I think there's going to be, a major effect on it. I think, every year, we were talking about this, every year there's a couple guys in the draft that work their way up to draft boards, right? They either have an impressive combine showing, they go to a certain team in a certain market and they just have it, they crush that workout. They get called back for, a second workout and they crush that workout and then they get drafted in the first round, happens every year. On the flip side of that, there's always guys that don't perform as well in the draft and they fall in the draft. So it's hard to see that happening a lot if there's no combine, if there's no in-person workouts. How these teams are currently making their draft boards, it's got to be on, all these teams send scouts throughout the season to the different colleges and different tournaments to watch these players. So I guess it's got to be on scouting reports and film. So I feel like, and then they're going to have an interview, right? So it's going to be the most important interview of all these guys' lives because it could have a huge impact on their draft status. So, I think they're still trying to figure it out themselves, the NBA, but it's definitely a very unique process that hopefully we never have to deal with again. But, I think it's a little bit up in the air how teams are going to deal with it, how teams are going to evaluate guys, how agents are going to market guys to teams. It'll be interesting. It's definitely going to be interesting.
Yeah, I was watching the NFL draft process and kind of watching closely because I was kind of curious how it would impact the NBA. And there were a few things that I saw. They were saying that there was less groupthink happening because you didn't have all these executives getting together at the same pro days and same workouts and talking about prospects. So there was less groupthink. There are certain guys that had maybe injury red flags weren't getting the, you can't have a prospect looked at by your medical staff and your trainers. So if the guy has a injury red flag, they may be hurt even more than in some years when maybe there are certain teams out there that looked at the guy and they feel like, okay, this is being blown out of proportion. If a guy's medical stuff is being questioned, then they could fall even further and have a hard time. And yeah, like you said, I mean, I think a lot of it's going to depend on your game film from when you were in college or what the scouts and everything saw from you during the season and who shines during the interview process. So those are some ways that I think it'll be impacted. And like you mentioned too, if there's a guy that's a small school guy that was really looking to dominate workouts and, show that he can compete against the top prospects and bigger name prospects, it's going to be tough for them to really show what they can do. There's been some talk. I know some draft prospects have talked about, doing virtual workouts where they have someone basically recording them putting up a pro day style workout, but you can't do 2-on-2, you can't do 3-on-3 like we usually see. So it'll be really interesting. Which prospects do you think could be the most impacted by this?
I think it's going to be mostly these guys that are like fringe first rounders, the beginning of the second round. If you're projected to be pick 2 through 45 to 50, sorry, 20 to 45 to 50, who knows what's going to happen, right? There's just so much uncertainty with the whole process. And like you're saying, as an agent, if I'm putting together a virtual workout video for teams, I can guarantee you my player ain't missing a shot for an
Right.
hour, right?
Yeah, it'll be edited.
I'm just gonna this guy's gonna be draining 7 half court shots in a row. Like that's just the way I'm gonna do it, right? I'm gonna try to, put him in the best light possible. I think a lot of for those guys, there's always a lot of uncertainty in that part of the draft anyways, because there's so many variables that change before that, before you get to pick 20. But I think, this year in particular, it's going to be interesting. I think there's going to be less pressure on GMs to pick like consensus picks. Like, oh man, this guy's a consensus top 5 pick. Well, I think there's probably a little bit less pressure on a GM to pick that guy this year just because of the nature of the way everything's kind of panning out. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think a lot of GMs really start paying attention, and we even discussed this, but you know, March Madness is a huge tournament for these, you know, these players. It's a big platform. All the scouts are at all the games. They're on a big stage. It's high pressure, high leverage situations. If you perform well, you can really help your draft stock a lot. Like a lot of these, all these players never got that opportunity. That's, you know, that's an entire month of tape that the most recent tape that teams just don't have anymore. And live scouting they don't have anymore. So, you know, it's just, you know, the more you think about it, the more you discuss about it, just the more uncertainty there is. So, you know, I think it's gonna be important for agents, especially in this draft, to really come up with some good strategies to sell their guys to teams.
For sure, yeah. I was thinking maybe some teams would either trade their pick or just, sell their pick off. Or, I mean, I thought there would be more players that would say, I'm just going to go back to school and go through the draft process next year when things are more normal. I mean, they pushed the deadline back. Do you think we could, where guys have to commit and enter their name into the draft, could we see that where certain guys are just like, I'm not going to mess with this year's draft process. Let me just have a normal year and one more year of schooling. Yeah, I know that a player's age is really big during the draft process, so you may not want to lose that year, but could we see that from some players?
Yeah, age is a huge factor. I mean, this is the thing that, you know, before anyone makes a decision like that, you kind of have to ask the question, is there going to be a college basketball season next year?
That's a great point, yeah.
Because these, you know, NBA players, like they're either, you know, they think they're going to do it in a confined space in Vegas or Florida. And then the next season, there probably won't be fans to start the season, but, you know, these guys are on private chartered flights. You know, a lot of college teams, some college teams are, but a lot of them aren't. They're flying commercial, right? Like, are you really going to have these amateur athletes being exposed? Are there going to be fans in the arenas? Is the college game season not going to start till January? Like, there's a lot of uncertainty around all this stuff, right? Even, you know, these guys that are signing, you know, with the G League instead of doing a freshman year in college, is there going to be a G League season next year? I don't know. I don't think anyone can answer that question right now. So it's interesting. I mean, you know, like we've discussed, there's just so much uncertainty around all of this. You know, I like to say, if you're ready to be a pro, you're ready to be a pro. Like, at the end of the day, no matter where you're drafted, who drafts you have to be able to go on the court, lace it up, and compete with professional basketball players. And if you can do that, you'll be fine. If you can't, you're gonna have some issues. So that should be the real question that these guys are asking themselves. But obviously, age is a huge factor when it comes to drafts, and how teams evaluate players. So, you know, it's a lot of big decisions for a lot of people.
Yeah, and you make a great point. It's not like you can say, I'm going to go back to school and next year is definitely going to be normal and a normal draft process. We don't know. But yeah, that's a great point. Well, Eric, thank you so much for doing this, man. You were fantastic. I could pick your brain for hours, but I won't put you through that. Thank you so much for joining me, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I want to shout out Hoops Hype. A lot of times people ask me what a typical day is like for an agent, and I always say there is no typical day for an agent. But the one thing I always tell them is I read Hoops Hype first thing in the morning, in the middle of the day, and the last thing before I go to bed. So it's an extremely important resource for my job. So appreciate all the work you guys do.
Well, that's awesome, man. We appreciate that. I've always said this too. I've read Hoops Hype every day since I was, much younger. I was a Hoops Hype reader before I was a Hoops Hype writer. So, I'm in the same boat as you. But we appreciate the love. I'm always amazed. I hear that from so many executives and so many agents that say, yeah, I check it all day long. And that's just such a cool thing to hear. So we really appreciate that. But thanks again, man. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
If you guys want to hear more episodes of the Hoops Hype podcast, check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere your favorite podcasts are found. And until next time, thanks for listening.